Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 1st of September, 2020. More divergences all around the house as we have the S&P 500 with its first negative session in eight after seven in a row to the upside. It wasn't anything spectacular, but we made minor new highs and closed below the prior day's close. But the NASDAQ 100 showing its usual divergence and continuing to bull higher. I noticed the S&P small cap 600, Peter, was down to closing at a six-day low. So it's just a bit more of the same here. And then we have this crazy after-hours activity after the Zoom report. Any takeaways from yesterday's session and what we're seeing overnight?
John, I think it's what's been coined the K recovery. So we have the technology and the large cap technology companies that have been just on an absolute strong momentum and a rebound both economically but also in their stock price. And you have the small caps and the rest of the broad market of small and medium-sized companies really not moving anywhere. So the big question is, how will those two segments of the equity market converge? Will they converge at a lower point for the NASDAQ, or will the NASDAQ just go flat or maybe slightly higher, and then the small cap will be in for a massive rally? I think that's the big question, and it remains to be seen. There's a lot of stimulus still coming through the system, and it would be very odd if it didn't trickle down to the small cap companies at one point. But you're right, the NASDAQ, and as also as you point out on the slide one, John, I mean, it's the recent momentum seems a little bit too red hot. It's really above, you know, that regression line you have put in there, the two standard deviations above. Also, if you take a monthly chart, it looks pretty super exponential on a log chart. I think we're really getting frothy here in the NASDAQ, but it helps when you have a company like Zoom yesterday reporting very, very strong Q2 earnings, up 355%. They blasted the revenue estimates by 33%, and they lifted their fiscal year outlook by, they doubled it basically. So when you have news like that, it's difficult not to, it's difficult, I guess, to be short this market, and you just have to keep with the momentum.
Yeah, and then as you pointed out, Tesla and Apple, the stock splits. I've got some perspective on that, but you've put up a chart on slide two, talking about how they've been performing here post split. And then something on Amazon and drones. I'm not even clued in on what's going on there. So fill us in.
Yeah, so the stock split was the Apple and Tesla announced stock splits, and we have a big crowd of new retail investors that's not used to what stock splits are is all about. But basically there's no free money in it. It's just that you're converging one share for either five or four, depending on the split size. So you're just getting new shares at a lower price. So your value is unchanged, but it's perceived as being very positive. It opens up for a bigger crowd, because, you know, Tesla was above $2,000. That's a pretty hefty price for a single share there. So now we're down to around a more meaningful 400 to 500 price range, give or take. But the share were up 12.5% yesterday, and there is no immediate news. So Tesla is now, you know, it's getting more and more valuable relative to other car makers. Elon Musk is now more wealthy than Mark Zuckerberg. It's getting pretty crazy there. And the Amazon, the quick story there is that they've been working for years on a drone delivering service. Obviously, they want to cut cost and make it more convenient and faster than by delivery van. And they just got the FAA clearance on that. So there was a lot of activity in Amazon shares yesterday. And I think that combination of those three stocks took the entire NASDAQ 100 higher yesterday.
Yeah, I've got another comment on Tesla, but let's just zoom back out a little bit to the general session. I mean, we're seeing a lot of equity markets around the world. Europe was weak. I've got a bit on Australia, actually, overnight, especially weak. I want to talk to you about that in a second. But, I mean, part of this is the flip side of is we're seeing the weaker dollar. And the dollar really strongly etching new lows again, pretty much across the board. And finally, the euro dollar joining into a degree, looking at that 120 level this morning, or at least in a very late Asian session. And although that has, of course, gold, the usual suspect, and because treasuries have been nullified, that move in treasuries has been nullified. I think that's a key component here.
Absolutely.
That we didn't follow through lower. In other words, yields higher. That combination is the perfect one for gold.
It is. We got, again, what you can almost call a trifecta of positive news driving gold and silver higher this morning. On slide seven, you can see the see this our focus there still on U.S. yields, and it's basically showing that we are seeing break-even yields, i.e. inflation expectations, continue to move higher. And yesterday we saw real yields, i.e. what you, the return you get after inflation, drop to a record low, -1.1%. And de facto, this chart is really showing that we've had yield curve control since April, even though we haven't. But yesterday, Clarita, which is the Fed vice chair, in her speech, basically was a little bit more forthright than Powell was last week. John could talk more about that. But the, her comments basically, if we are seeing his, sorry, his comments.
Richard is a he.
Exactly. These are really just helping gold higher. You can potentially argue, well, why aren't we above 2,000 when we have so much tailwind coming in? Also with the general risk appetite, which as Peter showed through the stocks, is remains strong, then you could potentially argue we should have been well above 2,000 this morning. We are not. Maybe that's a good thing that we don't have these massive spikes, because they are always quite often end in some pain. But overall, as long as these trends are maintained, there's no reason not to hang on to gold, and especially silver longs. Silver has now reached the most expensive level against gold since 2017. So silver is also on the move this morning.
And any component, anytime you see silver on the move, you have to have a glance over copper, because the copper mining associated with silver production and the industrial side of it as well.
Exactly, yeah. John. And that's potentially adding to the additional bit we're seeing in silver on slide eight. I've just highlighted it's the weekly copper chart, and we're now well clear of the $3 pound level, which we had had us resistant up until recently. And we had some data from China now for the last couple of days, which continue to show improvement. We have tight market conditions. We can see that in how the spot is behaving relative to further out prices. And then the weaker dollar, obviously, as well, especially as against the renminbi. If you plot the copper and the Chinese renminbi on top of each other, you can see there's a decent inverse correlation there.
Yeah, and then one equity market overnight, just again, not fitting with that reflationary story, higher copper prices, iron ore. Iron ore is arguably a bit more interesting for Australia, but the Australian market really having a tough time of it. There was an RBA meeting last night. It was pretty standard stuff on the statement. There was no strong language. There was a mention of currency, but there was no strong language on currency. They did a big expansion of sort of the equivalent of what the ECB has done historically with their TLTROs, that is these loans to banks. But the market, the Australian markets, are quite interesting to follow up, Peter. We've seen it sort of skimming along the 200-day moving average. It looks like we both put a chart in today. I think both charts are useful, yours for the headline and maybe mine for just showing the 200-day moving average. That's on slide six. And it's really just dumped very badly overnight. I was looking around. I mean, apparently some expectations of an RBA actually cutting a bit more, although they do seem quite clearly against a negative rate policy. But that was not the clear proximate cause. There was also this news that a Australian anchor woman for a mainland Chinese English language broadcasting or news agency was detained with no word on why. I think in general, before I let you speak, sorry, Peter, for this long intro, but I think Australia is just massively, it's at a very poorly placed in this ongoing disengagement of the U.S. and Chinese economies with its traditional intelligence and military alliance with, for example, the U.S. and the so-called Five Eyes security arrangement, whereas its economy, at least on the output side and physical goods, totally dependent on China. But you have some other things on the financial side on what's going on with Australian equities overnight.
Yeah, it was mainly the financials to track down the index, and that's obviously, you could argue it's a little bit odd given the strong iron ore prices and the rebound that we have seen in general in demand from China. It shouldn't really impact the financials that much. So I put that a little bit of a noise, but I think the sentiment was impacted as well by one of their leading technology companies in that index, which is the Afterpay stock. That stock was down almost 10% on the news that PayPal now is launching its competing service, which is basically you pay now and then you pay after. Hence the Afterpay word. It's a new concept within the payments and processing world.
Will that be called credit?
Yeah, you could actually call it credit.
Pay now, but pay back later. It sounds like credit to me.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, John. They come up with all these new words for the same thing. But so PayPal is launching its service into that. I think that also they Afterpay, they spin an interesting some services around their offering. But so I think that took sentiment down. But I agree with you, John. It's very interesting to follow. Also because it's one of those indices that haven't fully recovered. Other cyclical indices like the South Korean equity market has more than recovered. It's a drawdown from before the pandemic, and yesterday actually launched a very massive stimulus. So you're seeing other Asian markets doing much, much better. You wonder what's really going on in Australia, and I know Eleanor, our strategist down in Sydney, have been highlighting the banks forever. I mean, it seems like the economy is quite fragile relative or given the housing boom they've seen and the extension of credit there.
Yeah, so I think as well, to be fair, I mean, I don't have my breakdowns here in front of me, but the Australian index and the big four banks, it has to be extremely heavily weighted towards financials relative to, I would suspect, a lot of the other Asian indices, but we can get that breakdown. Before, I really want to get your take on Zoom, but I put up a couple things on Tesla, which I think deserve comment after today. Yesterday's is absolutely zany session where the newly split Tesla rocketed from a close the prior day below 450 to basically almost touching $500. Just an incredible gain, probably, I'm sure, on no news items. And just to get a perspective partially on what's driving this, I suspect there's a lot of activity in the options market driving this. We've talked about this before. I was a bit surprised we didn't see a pause after it hit that pre-split $2,000 level, but perhaps this $500 level in focus. And we saw the September options, which expire in the Friday, I'm forgetting what the calendar is, 18th, whatever the Friday the 18th. Just as an example, what people are doing here that are playing this through options. Of course, you talk about the stock price being high, but you don't have to buy the stock. If you think there's going to be significant percentage gains, you can look at a call option. And people, a matter of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days ago, buying 500 strike options for a sub $10 per contract or per option. That price is, as of yesterday's close, at $43, 500%+ gains in a matter of a week. So these are the kind of speculative plays people are doing. That strike price, that $500 strike price, paid traded in 41,000 lots yesterday. That's a notional stock amount of over $2 billion. One strike price, one contract on the underlying stock. And a little tweet from Ben Hunt, who I think is a must follow on Twitter at Epsilon Theory, talking about narrative. He's so good on this whole narrative discussion. Says no one is buying Tesla or Apple because of the stock split. But lots of people are buying in Tesla and Apple because they think other people are buying Tesla and Apple because of the stock split. This is the common knowledge game in action. So, you know, be careful out there. It's fine to maybe put lottery ticket type trades on for these types of gains. But whenever it ends, whether it's at a stock price of $600 or $6,000 for Tesla, and Elon Musk is worth twice as much as Bezos by the end of this, I think it will end in tears, as we've talked about before. The main question being one of the timeline, but not quite back down.
But I think it's worth mentioning, John, that it's there's a lot of speculation in options. But at least if we have to mention one positive thing, is that if you do actually speculate heavily in Tesla, it's probably better to do it in the options. You can argue if you just buy the options, because at least you have a hard you had a hardcore stop loss driven by your premium. Whereas
very good point. Very key point, actually. A much safer way. Safe. Only in the event that you're limiting the size of your bets on the upside. Whereas, as you point out, if there is, for whatever reason, some sudden crash in the equity, your downside is of course, a share price of, well, zero theoretically. But yes, that's a very key point, and why it is safer, again, if limiting the trade size, to do a long volatility play. Take us through Zoom. They really blew it out of the park on the both the revenue and the profits in the after hours reporting.
Yeah, I must admit that it was very impressive. I mean, they they made more money in the last 3 months or the 3 months of the Q2 than the entire 2019. Their revenue was up 355% versus around 250% expected by analysts. So they beat the revenue estimates by 33%. They doubled their fiscal outlook for earnings. Shares were much higher, as you can see on the on slide 10. That was even in the main session. So in the extended session, the share price even increased even more. So it's an impressive rally, and they've closed some very big customers in the Q2, and it seems like analysts and investors are really betting heavily that they can sustain their competitive advantage. I have serious doubts about that.
I agree.
I'm not sure their product is having a strong enough moat to sustain a valuation of these levels and the profitability that it's baked in or discounted into the valuation. I think it's ludicrous to not think that Microsoft and Facebook, with their massive reach, will not go very hard into this market. And both of those companies already have a product that is competing, and Microsoft, despite how much hatred that's always been put at Microsoft, one thing you cannot take away from them is that they have probably the most superb distribution channel in the entire world. They have relationship with every single company in the world via their operating system,
right?
Business. So from a fundamental perspective, I'm impressed, but I'm very lukewarm to whether they can actually sustain their competitive advantage.
Yeah, and then before we go to the calendar, is there any word or two, Ola, on oil? Is it just sort of maintaining altitude but not really doing much more? Or?
Yeah, I think basically two words is enough, or maybe three. It's basically just doing nothing. We are anchored at 43 in WTI, 45.5 in Brent. Renewed coronavirus case around the world, obviously dampening on demand. We're seeing a small slowdown now, a seasonal slowdown in U.S. demand for gasoline as well. But against that, stock inventories are expected to drop further. The dollar is weaker. But overall, we simply don't have any energy in that market for now. So focus today will be a production report from Bloomberg and then the API tonight. But really, the market is lacking direction right now.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to cue the laugh track when you said it was lacking energy. But let's look at the calendar. We have the latest manufacturing PMIs out starting overnight in Asia. The one, the Caixin in China was at 53.1. But however, South Korea and Japan still just under 50, slightly less contractionary readings overnight versus the prior month, but still nothing impressive. And then we're looking towards Europe this morning, where we've already seen the flash PMI, so there's a little bit less anticipation around those. France has been the loser so far with a preliminary figure of 49, spot zero, so still a slight contraction there as of the flash reading for this month. I think the ISM manufacturing could merit some interest. It's expected to well above 50 again. Look out for Fed's Brainard speaking. She is often quite influential as well on policy. And then I'm really curious to hear from the RBNZs or out tonight, as the Kiwi has been pretty strong, and especially with the Kiwi dollar where it is trading above 67, if he has any follow-up language on the currency, when they've pretty much said we're laying the groundwork for negative rates and we're happy to intervene in the currency. Quite a different note from the Australian RBA, and quite interesting, we've kind of bogged down there and haven't been able to progress higher after that big move above 110 recently in Aussie Kiwi. So watch out for that if you're trading the little Kiwi out there. And then, of course, we look towards the U.S. employment data later this week, and especially the jobless claims for the high-frequency data point on Thursday. For now, it's been a mouthful today. We'll call it a day, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.